Chapter 20. There were two places that served food at the college. One was the cafeteria, where the usual mediocre arrangement of burgers and chips and dogs and cold sandwiches was served. There was a long row of tables reserved for faculty and staff, who seemed to be keeping a watchful eye over the other tables. The kids, mostly the math and science students, dutifully did as they were told. Ron got his coffee there and hated the place. Most of the conservative organizations, including GIA, had tables set up in the cafeteria. Somebody from their table tried to stare Ron down each time he was noticed. Ron learned that since the publication of Darker Shade of White, that all the fraternities and sororities were all white. Supposedly, one of the sororities had a light-skinned pledge who quit after reading Ron's article and talking it over with her friends. The other place that served food was the snack bar. If you were cool or just wanted to look that way, you hung out at the snack bar. Rudy music from the radio station was pumped in at a louder volume. There was an adjoining lounge filled with plastic-covered chairs and couches you could lie down on. The student council, the newspaper, the freaks, the jocks, and the unattached inhabited the snack bar. It was also a place where dope deals were possible. It had never occurred to Ron that drugs were available at his college. He'd read about things that went on at college campuses around the country, but he'd never been involved with any of it, and didn't think that any of the people he saw around him were capable of pulling it off. Vivi walked through the door talking. "I've got so many things to do, and there just isn't enough..." "Well, that's not your problem, right?" Ron didn't answer. "You're going to do the article on the new student council reps, right?" Ron nodded, thinking that this girl was just too annoying to fuck. "Okay," she said, spreading her fingers in the air as if she were trying to remember something important. Ron looked at her body. "Not bad, but Peter told me that he assigned you to write the article about the talks for the speeches, right?" "That's right," said Ron. "Well, here's the list of candidates we want endorsed. Now, it would be far out if these were the only names that you mentioned in your article. Chris says that if you really want to, you can stick the other names in somewhere down near the end, you know, also running R, the following, but that wouldn't really be as cool." "I don't know what you're talking about." "What don't you understand?" she said, turning her head sharply. Then she looked at the wall clock and checked it against her wristwatch. "Look," she smiled, "it would be really far out to rap with you, but I gotta run. We'll try it once, more quickly. This is the list of the council's endorsements for freshman representatives. If you have any questions, show the list to Peter or Julian, and they'll tell you what to do." She smiled at him again. Ron thought it was the phoniest smile he'd ever seen in his life. She would really look like a plastic doll if she didn't have such a plain to ugly face. "Look, I don't know who Julian is, and I don't think anybody should be telling me who to write about in the article." The newspaper room door opened, and a skinny, hawkish-faced kid with horn-rimmed glasses entered. Ron remembered him vaguely. "Vivi," he said, with a big grin and an open mouth. "Hi, Julian," she said in a cheerful voice. "Julian, I've got to run. Do you think you could explain what this guy doesn't understand about this?" Julian looked over at Ron, then back at V. He smirked. "What are you trying to explain to him?" "I'm not sure what the problem is," said Vivi. She scuffled forward toward the work table where her stack of books was, pointed down at the list in front of Ron, saying, "Julian's on the student council, too." And she waved goodbye to Julian and was out the door. Ron felt uncomfortable under the scrutiny of the bird-like face behind the large brown frames that regarded him with a snooty expression. "What is it that you need to have explained to you?" "I'm not sure," said Ron, blowing smoke out through his nose. Julian picked up a piece of paper. V.D. had pointed to and read silently. "Oh," he said finally, in an obvious tone, "these are the people the student council would like to have us join them from the freshman class." Ron detected a slight lisp in his speech when he said freshman class. "I thought the representatives were elected," he said sarcastically. The door opened again, and Nan Timsek walked into the room with Sophie Warren. Ron watched with obvious delight the sway of Sophie's peasant dress. Nan was Peter's girlfriend. Everybody said hello, and Julian moved to the side of the room opposite Ron, taking overly long strides with his arms held stiffly at his sides. Ron thought it was an awkward sort of gait, but that he seemed to do it smoothly. Julian stood watching Ron with his friends, hands folded behind his back. Ron thought that he resembled a smart-ass lieutenant who always used started trouble with the Indians by being a jerk-off. Ron stood up and moved over next to Julian. "Look," he said, "I don't believe this is any of your business. I mean, this isn't the two fucking party system." "No," said Julian. "We've adopted the improved concept. We have one basic party. But it doesn't seem that you were invited." "Hey, man, I didn't ask for any of this shit. This was one too many times to be fucked over on a day that had been so promising. I'm supposed to write an article about all the candidates, but I think Peter would agree that this would make a much more interesting read." Ron glared at Julian's throat as he answered. "It just makes perfect sense for us to say who should get elected, because we're the only ones who pay attention to what's going on. It will approve attendance at the polls if we tell them who to vote for. Most of them won't vote at all, or even know that there's an election. There's the explanation. It's really as simple as the alphabet, which, by the way, would be a good idea for you to learn." Ron was ready to stomp on his Adam's apple until it resembled a squashed acorn. "What the fuck is that supposed to mean?" "It means that you should proofread. Do you even know what proofreading is?" Ron wasn't sure that he did, but he knew it wasn't the time to ask. "Look," continued Julian, "why don't you wait right over here and work on your article or your penmanship or something, and I'll send someone back who knows how to talk to you." He slipped his hands down to his side like a vehicle trying to cut wind resistance and headed for the door with splint-like steps. Sophie swayed over sumptuously. "How are you, Ron?" Her eyes reminded him of Chipper, but her hips, did move so nicely. "Are you going to the party tonight?" "I'm not sure," said Ron, remembering that he still hadn't looked for Kathy. Ron looked over at Nan, who was standing quite still and expressionless. "I probably will go," said Ron. Sophie had large breasts and wasn't wearing a bra. She watched Ron stare at her tits and wondered how long they would hold his attention. She and Nan were so stoned that she'd never be able to figure out how long it really was. "Nan and I are looking for Peter." Ron snapped his head up to her face. She frowned and realized that she'd distracted him. "Are you gonna go?" Sophie raised the back of her hand up to her forehead the way that he'd seen silent screen actors do. "Alas, no," she said with exaggerated sadness and a large smile. The door opened again, and Chris Calvin came in, led by Julian Willey. Ron was surprised that such a small thing could attract so much attention. There was the student council president in a different colored Nehru shirt, carrying a hard-shell briefcase like a businessman. He came over to Ron. "I'm Chris Calvin," he said. "My name is Ron Tuck." Chris said, "Good to meet you," but he didn't extend his hand. He did smile, and the look put Ron immediately more at ease. "What's the problem?" said Chris. "I don't know. It seems to have something to do with your people trying to fix the election of the freshman representatives." Chris didn't like the sensationalized way that Ron worded it. It sounded too much like a headline. Of course, he could stop him from writing just about anything in the commuter, but what about the other publication? The paper would love to print something like this. "These are just suggestions. They're righteous endorsements based on who we think would do a good job. Based on what somebody's father does for a living." Ron had noticed long ago that Kathy's name was definitely not on the list. "What is this idiot talking about?" Julian asked. He walked around in a circle like a giant crane. The door to the room opened and closed. Again. Vivi was coming back from her class with a surprised look on her face. Ron began to feel outnumbered. "It just doesn't feel right," he said, shaking his head. "There's nothing at all wrong with it," said Chris, trying to be patient and not sound in the least upset. Vivi had returned to the room. She moved forward and cracked her gum twice. "Why are you bothering to try to argue with him?" she said to Chris and Julian. "He's absolutely nobody." Everyone in the room looked at Ron. He tried to peer nonchalant, but it was useless. Vivi started for the door again. "Well, I'm sure not going to stand around here doing nothing." She enunciated the last word in Ron's direction in a way that made Julian snicker. "You know," he said, "she's obviously right." Chris didn't like it. He looked at Julian nervously, and then he said to Ron, "Do you have a class now?" "No." "Let's go upstairs where we can talk a little more quietly." Julian sensed something was coming that he wouldn't like one bit. "I'm on my way to black literature," he said. Ron was sure that he was about to click his heels. "Okay, Julian, what are you going to be doing later?" said Chris. "I'll call before I leave for the party." "Why don't you just stop over on your way there?" "I'll call you first," said Julian. He turned and looked Ron full in the face. "There are blackboards up in the student council room. Perhaps you could practice up there." He turned quickly and was out the door in two crane-like strides. "I'm going to practice on his nose," said Ron, moving after him. Chris stood up in front of the door and burst out laughing. "Right, you'll get used to him. It's just his way." "That's what they said about me when I was a kid." Julian's insults were still stinging him. Chris laughed again. "Come on upstairs." Ron checked where his books were stacked, patted his breast pocket to make sure he had his cigarettes, and picked up his pad and the list of endorsements. He felt like he was going to get some kind of an interview. He'd never seen the upstairs portion of the campus center before. He hadn't seen the black tubular pipe that was designed like an owl. As he rounded the first of the two flights of stairs, he noticed the people passing by on the other side of the double glass doors appeared to be fish moving in the corridor stream. The second floor of the campus center contained the radio station, the student council room, an art gallery, and some teachers' offices. There were also some fairly prestigious rooms. The General Livingston Room was where the Board of Trustees used to meet before students were given access to the place. Ron followed Chris into what used to be a classroom. It was now equipped with three long tables arranged in a U. There were about 15 chairs placed around the configuration. Old couches and folding chairs lined the wall. Metal filing cabinets topped with large stereo speakers stood in two of the corners. Ron lit a cigarette, offered one to Chris, who produced his own pack. Chris checked the memo pad next to his telephone to see if there were any messages, lowered the volume on the speakers, and watched Ron soaking in the atmosphere of the setup. What do you think? What do you mean? Chris quickly shifted back to his topic about the freshman reps. Just doesn't seem fair, Ron said. You were at the speeches, weren't you? Ron nodded. What's wrong with the people I'm endorsing? But why should you have the power to say who's going to get elected? Because, practically speaking, they have to be good people that I can get along with so that we can all do good things for the kids at the school. Like what? Said Ron, feeling like he was calling a bluff. This year, I increased the student activities budget from $4,000 to $40,000. With that kind of funding, we can expand the newspaper and do a lot of things that we couldn't even think about before. But why can't you do those things based on who everybody chooses to have elected? Look, I'm not stupid, despite what your friend Julian thinks. To really think that I have any power to keep you from endorsing anybody you want. I'm concerned about two things. Why that screwy broad V told me that I could only mention certain names in my article, and why you would lock somebody out just because her father's a pig. Chris was absolutely sure they wanted this guy to have no idea that pounds of pot were passed at the school every week. He was also sure that he didn't want him to know all the reasons that he had for carrying his briefcase. Ron noticed that Chris's leg was tapping again. He stared at it. Chris flipped his ash awkwardly toward a silver paper ashtray. I was elected through an agreement of a number of people last year, a coalition of different groups that shared the trust that I was going to do the right thing. Chris hunched his shoulders, locked his fingers to represent the coalition, and looked into Ron's face. Ron was impressed. Chris was telling them that he really did run the student segment of the school. Now, the job of the commuter is completely up to the people downstairs. I did some writing for the newspaper last year, and I think I have its best interests in mind. Vivi and Julian are both sophomore reps. Vivi is also the president of her sorority. Chris was looking at Ron with a reassurance. Ron believed on the instant that Chris really would try to do the right thing. He wanted to say that he'd be glad to help, but the realization hit him that Chris didn't need any help. Ron looked at him with admiration. Truth is, man, that this is girl I'm desperately trying to fuck. She's got the nice, well, she's pretty. Anyway, I can't write an article about the speeches and not include her. Saying that her father was an agent for the FBI was terrible, said Chris. I felt that too, but some parts of me are totally blind. Ron flashed his grin for the first time. The idea that we are all like a party and, you know, really enjoy things. That's what it is. Chris was bobbing his head as he spoke. With a coalition, we can act as a single force. Look, why don't you write an article about something else? We won't put anything in the commuter, either way. That sounds great, said Ron. He hadn't much liked the assignment anyway. He looked over at Chris, who was playing with the end of his mustache and judging the effect of his words with pleasure. I'd like to do an article about speed bumps around the school. Far out, said Chris, bobbing his head in agreement. Well, I better start getting it together, said Ron. Ron went back to the commuter room, feeling energized. He liked the idea of expressing his outrage over the speed bumps a lot more than reporting on student council elections. There was a girl sitting in the room reading when Ron entered. He smiled at her, slid down into his chair. He lit a cigarette and said, Hi, my name is Ron Tuck. She looked up, a small smile spreading across her thin mouth. I'm Jade, and you're the new reporter that I'm supposed to meet. She tilted her head, and Ron thought she was going to take off her glasses. He had trouble seeing the color of her eyes, but Jade's face left him astonished. His eyes ran uncontrollably over her face and neck. They danced on her shoulders and made swan dives to her slender waist. They skated across her leather boots and curled between her thighs. When he returned to her face, he saw a small smile at the corners of her mouth and slightly colorless eyes that stared amused at him with a soft gray shimmering appearance. She knows that I've checked out her body, and it's okay, registered in Ron's brain like the first day of spring. Would you like to walk over and get some coffee, he blurted out. I don't think I want anything to drink right now, she said and looked at her book. Ron's spirit sunk like a paper plane in a thunderstorm, but then she added, you go get what you want. I'll be here. Okay, he said. I'll be right back. But are you sure you don't want anything? Not right now, she said without looking up. As he went out the door, she thought he was easy to control, the type you get to run as fast as you wanted in any direction you pointed him. That was fine, she thought, smiling at the way Sophie had told her that he sounded smart when he talked. He certainly looked trainable. Ron stubbed out his cigarette and went for coffee. He needed a strategy. She was going to stay in the commuter room and wait for him. He licked his lips, thinking about the way the seam of her jeans ran right up between her legs. She'd opened them when she said hello to him and told him her name. She acted like she'd seen him before. He paid for his coffee and remembered to take a lid, happy that he was learning to stop spilling hot coffee on himself. He stopped in the hall with the thought that he couldn't just go back in there and stare at her again. Say anything, he told himself, but get the fuck back in the room before something happens to ruin it. Jade saw Ron coming back and looked into her book. She glanced up and smiled quickly when he entered the room, but returned to her page. This has been some day, said Ron. She closed the finger on her book. Why is that? First, I got a ticket for speeding from a cop. I think I'm stopping to help. Then I make a fool out of myself in my English class. I didn't think you made a fool of yourself. I thought Warren was just being cruel. Ron's mouth dropped open. She was in Lashley's class. She smiled and held up the book she'd been reading. Ron saw, to his further embarrassment, that it was his English book. Gee, he said, I never noticed you there. Jay didn't think that was the most complimentary thing for him to say. Why do you call him Warren? I don't know. It seems more comfortable and natural. You know, why do I call you Ron? But he's a teacher, Ron protested. Jade thought that sounded like a rather uncool remark, but decided to overlook it. The conversation became less strained than that. They talked about the other classes they were taking. Ron finished his coffee and smoked two cigarettes. He was relieved to see that Jade also smoked. It always made things easier. Finally, Ron asked her if she was going to the Birth of October party. I might, but I really don't have a way to get there. She was leaving him an opening wide enough to drive a Mack truck through. I'd really like to take you with me, said Ron, gallantly. You would? She smiled and showed Ron the tip of her tongue. Why would you want to do that? I feel very comfortable with you. In fact, I think you're quite great. Do you know how to get to Scotch Plains? She said softly. I'll find it. It might help if I drew you a map, she said, looking for a piece of paper. Ron ripped a sheet out of his notebook and brought it over to her. Standing up, he felt a tightness in his pants that told him he had a hard-on. She could almost see detail on the tip of his cock as he reached out to her. For a second, she thought about rubbing the tip of his head to say hello, but decided against it. He hurried back to his chair, crossed his legs, hoping she hadn't noticed. Jade held her giggle back and drew the familiar road map, automatically adding her address and phone number at the top of the page. Ron felt a bit relieved when Peter and Nan came into the room. He wanted to go home, take a long shower, so that he could think about what to wear that night. He made a quick exit. Jade watched his big shoulders and little round ass as he strode out of the room. She wondered how strong his arms were as she gathered her legs together and smiled at Nan. Did he ask you? Said Nan. Jane nodded her head, blew on the tips of her fingers, just like a horny little lamb. Nan laughed without moving her mouth.